District of Conservation is sponsored by CFACT. To learn more about our sponsor, head over to CFACT.org. Thank you so much for listening. Welcome to District of Conservation. I'm your host, Gabriella Hoffman. This podcast offers a sober examination into all things hunting, fishing, shooting sports, energy, environment, and the public policy surrounding it. And this podcast also specializes in original interviews that you won't hear elsewhere. Here's what I have for you today. Before getting to today's interview, I want to extend my gratitude to you all who wished me kind thoughts and regards regarding my new position with Independent Women's Forum. It's not really a departure from what I was doing, but now I'm kind of like the manager of these portfolio set of issues, and I'll be able to engage more. You may see me on TV, in the halls of Congress more, in committee hearings, and be out there to talk about these issues, especially as it relates to women, and even not to women, to men, of course, but primarily trying to channel these issues more to women. Nothing's going to stop here on the podcast. We're still going to go full throttle. That's the beauty of me having taken this role. I accepted it on the condition that I could still do my other projects, and we will be able to continue to do that, including this show, my column, and all Conservation Nation video subject matters, and anything that I currently do is not going to go changed whatsoever. But today, we're going to talk about rodeo. Now, you might be thinking, why is rodeo being lumped in with conservation? Why is this subject something Gabriella is discussing, that I'm discussing? There are a lot of parallels between those who oppose hunting and fishing and those who also oppose rodeo and animal agriculture. The opposition are led by the same groups and individuals. They may tailor their tactics a little differently, but it's all one and the same in terms of strategy and eliminating these really important facets of society, animal agriculture to hunting and fishing, through the efforts of groups. And why I'm talking about this now, soon we're going to be seeing potentially the city of Los Angeles enact an outright ban of rodeo. Rodeo has been a very popular activity in my home state. Rodeo brings a lot of people. It's a very popular sport across the different kind of elements there. PBR is a very popular venue and format for people. Millions watch it. People go to PBR-related events in Vegas and all over the country. And even non-PBR-related events, other types of rodeos like that being proposed in San Diego at Petco Park where the Padres play. I used to go there on occasion, and it's a beautiful ballpark, very scenic, very beautiful, and they want to bring rodeo there too, but they're facing the same opposition from PETA and other animal welfare law outfits. And so I brought on today Dave Duquette of Western Justice, and he is going to talk about this threat, why sportsmen and women should care, especially if you care about animal well-being, and hunters and anglers do, as do farmers and ranchers. But Dave Duquette says that he's a loud and clear voice of reason for agricultural and rural rights in the U.S. With a passion for rural American causes, Western Justice, the Western Justice founder, has expertise fighting some of the toughest battles in agriculture. He has a career spanning efforts as an animal welfare and agriculture advocate starting over 2 decades ago. He was a Marine. He's built several businesses and has a horse training facility in Northeast Oregon. So this group, Dave Duquette's group, is fighting tooth and nail to ensure that the Western way of life, cowboy, cowgirl interests, rural interests, in fact, are protected. And so I don't want to take any more time away with introductions. I'm going to hand it over to Dave Duquette. I hope you guys enjoy this interview and learn from it and see the parallels between what rodeo and animal agriculture are facing to what sportsmen and women are also facing as well. Dave, thank you so much for joining District of Conservation. Good to have you on.
Thanks. Thanks for having me, Gabrielle.
Could you give my listeners a bit of your background and talk about your involvement in maintaining the Western way of life, rodeo, et cetera, please?
Well, I've been a lifelong horseman and horse trainer. I spent a few years in the Marine Corps, and that kind of gave me a little different perspective on how to fight and how to protect things. And when I started noticing, when I got about 40 years old, I started noticing how the animal rights groups were trying to take away my lifestyle, and they were working pretty hard at it. And I knew a lot of great people, big people, sold horses to Phil and Penny Knight of Nike, been around some of the biggest people in the horse industry, especially in the Western horse world, which I think there's a lot of very, you know, large players that people have no idea that the horse industry is as big as it is. But anyway, that's what led me to start to see these bullies in the animal rights groups and how I was going to try to stop them from doing what they were doing. And I thought, you know, I have just enough tenacity. I know just enough big names and people, and I'm just going to go do it because nobody else was doing it. The big organizations weren't doing it, from AQHA to the American Horse Council, who I'm sure you know is based in DC. You know, they sat on the fence all the time on hard issues, tough issues, and they did things that were going to adversely affect the horse industry as a whole, and especially the Western horse world. The Western horse world makes up about 3/4 of the domestic horses in the United States, and we have no representation in D.C. The American Horse Council is, you know, is run by the Jockey Club, which basically runs everything that they want done, but not what is best for the rest of the industry. So, you know, I started Western Justice, the legislative fund. I started off with just the legislative fund, which is a C4, to be the voice and advocate for Western lifestyle. It's histories, traditions, it's our livelihoods, and, you know, help keep it safe for future generations. So that's good.
Oh, no. Continue.
No, I was just going to say that's basically where, you know, our motto is justice is truth in action. So we, you know, it is kind of funny because I've had people shy away from our organization because of the name, because everybody's too damn woke anymore. And they shy away from us because of the name. It's too abrupt, too, you know, confrontational, whatever they want to call it. And it's kind of funny because some of the people that have done it and said that are people who make their living off of TV shows that are very abrupt and abrasive and make cowboys look bad. So in my estimation, but it's kind of funny that those people will take that name and say that it's not the right way to be, or it's too aggressive.
I think it's a good name because you get people's attention when you're, you know, named like that. And could you explain some of the organization's goals to those who may be unfamiliar?
Well, our main goals really are to protect our lifestyle. The animal rights groups have an all out assault on animal agriculture. And when I ran, you know, I ran Protect the Harvest for almost 8 years. So when I was there, we were very spread out at Protect the Harvest. We were very, there was a lot of different things going on and we went a lot of different directions. You know, we secured I don't know if you saw that, but we secured 13 states' attorneys generals to fight back against California and Massachusetts on Question 3 in Massachusetts and Proposition 12, 2 and 12 in California, you know, which basically goes against the Dormant Commerce Clause and would make it illegal for you to ship anything to those states that isn't raised to their standards, any animal. So cage-free, all the crazy things that California is doing to ruin our food supply would be in effect for all the way around the country. And to put into context on that, the interesting part for me is that I got all the numbers back in about 2013 or 14 on all this from a guy that worked in the Department of Ag in California. And he was very nice and gave me information that maybe he probably shouldn't have. I probably should have had to FOIA it. But it showed that, you know, Proposition 2 was about going to, you know, cage-free eggs. And if you don't, and Proposition 12 was to protect the California producers. Well, Proposition 2 with the cage-free eggs make it illegal to have battery cages for chickens, laying hens. And then California consumed 9 billion eggs a year at that point. And they only produced 2 billion eggs a year in state. So they got 7 billion eggs imported from 29 other states. So when they got Proposition 12 passed, that made it so that those 29 states could not ship those 7 billion eggs, which is not insignificant, obviously, and not an insignificant part of your business. They couldn't ship to California without making them cage-free eggs and aligning. And then California sent inspectors out. So these are the kind of, you know, inspectors to these states, I should say. And these are the kind of things that the bullying of the animal rights groups to animal agriculture and the horse industry is a very low-hanging fruit there in the rodeo world. So because of those, I got really passionate about trying to stop these people and figure out who they were and expose them. Expose who they are, why they're doing what they're doing, and trying to protect the industry that I love. And since I left Protect the Harvest, I've came to the realization that I can't be everything to everyone. I don't have that kind of money. I don't have that kind of money behind me. So I stuck to where now I'm sticking to the lane that I should be in, which is the Western horse world, which is where I know the most about, whether it's the wild horses, the tribal horses, or the domestic horse industry. I know the most about those three entities, and that's where I'm sticking in my lane. And Western Justice is trying, you know, anything to do with branching. We have right now, as an example, we have we're exposing a corruption ring in Idaho that's trying to take ranch. It's the real life Yellowstone. Let's put it that way.
Huh.
It is the real life, you know, the whole premise behind Yellowstone is that they're going in to take away these people, you know, the Dutton's ranch and develop it and all that. And everybody's trying to, you know, they're willing to die for it or kill for it or whatever. This is the real life Yellowstone. It's in Idaho. And I have people, investigators that have been in there and gotten way more than the FBI ever got on it. And the FBI had been on it for a year and a half and were stonewalled. And my investigators that we hired went in there and found a racketeering situation it's federal now. It's going federal, but it is going to be probably one of the most corrupt situations we've ever seen in the United States as far as racketeering and going out. And it started off as a call from a rancher saying, you know, a homesteading rancher in Idaho, his family homestead in the 1800s. And this rancher calling me and saying, Dave, I we're at our wit's end. The woman's, his wife's crying. Our daughter is crying. And they're going, we don't know what to do. We can't, the judge is corrupt. Everything is corrupt in this situation. And we don't know how or why what's going on is going on or why they're doing what they're doing, but they're trying to forcibly annex these ranches into the city, which would put them out of business and totally out of business from tax liability. And so they were just totally at their wit's end. We go in there and start looking around and start doing a documentary about it, thinking that was going to be the way to stop it, was to expose it. And we got into a can of worms that we were like, holy crap, this is something else. And it's turned out to be all we thought it was and even more. You know, so there's people that have done intelligence work and intelligence gathering working on this issue that have been all over the world doing this stuff. And they are from another country, but live here. They're American citizens now. And they're from a third world country that was very corrupt. And this one gal, she just goes, I've seen this kind of corruption in many countries doing intelligence work for the military. And she said, but I've never seen it in the United States like this. And her impassioned plea to make something happen. Hopefully we can stop this and thwart it, because this is what it looks like in the beginning when a country goes down, as they start, corruption like this starts to take hold. So those are the kind of things that I love doing. And one of the things we're doing with Western Justice, and, you know, I'm not sure if you know, but like the two ranchers that Trump pardoned when I was at Protect the Harvest, I was the one that got Trump, put all that together and got Trump to pardon the Hammonds, the two ranchers from Oregon. So those are the kind of things I really like to do with what I'm doing. So, you know, now I've taken over all of that, or brought all that kind of stuff into Western Justice. So everything from dealing with the Horse Protection Act, which, it's funny because there's horse organizations like the Jockey Club and the American Horse Council and those groups over there. Even the AQHA has backed up the Horse Protection Act, and unwittingly, and they're backing this Horse Protection Act where the USDA will come in and inspect at horse shows. That would ruin an industry that's 12 times the size of the NFL. You know, the last time they did a study on the horse industry, it was $122 billion a year industry. Well, politicians hear big numbers all the time. So to put that into context for them, the same year, the NFL was only a $10 billion a year industry compared to the horse industry at $122. And that's, it's probably light right now, because that's a number that's probably fairly light compared to, because the price of horses and the horse industry's kind of picked up in the last few years. And, you know, the craze, the, what I call the third coming of the urban cowboy with the Yellowstone craze, you know, has come into effect. And so there's a lot more people involved in it than there were before.
That's a lot of ground that you cover. And I know one of your biggest focuses, and how we were connected by a mutual friend, is your work to preserve rodeo. Right. And this is obviously happening in my home state of California, unsurprisingly, but I have observed that they have been trying to attack rodeo for several decades. And this is nothing new to me, but to most of my listeners, I think they're just starting to become aware of these attacks on rodeo, specifically in Los Angeles and most recently in San Diego. But could you share about your work to preserve rodeo and fight these ordinances that you guys are working on right now?
You bet. So about almost February, it's 3 years, a city councilman in Los Angeles had decided he was going to try to ban rodeo. And that was in February of 2020. And when, or 2021, it was February 2021. And when he did that, he guised it as saying, and said very openly and publicly, that he was not trying to ban the sport of rodeo. So stop being hyperbolic about it. Stop doing that, because we are only trying to ban implements of torture. And that's it. And with the implements of torture deal, they were trying to ban hot shots, bucking flank straps, bucking ropes, bull ropes, spurs, fixed or sharpened spurs is what they call them. So I built this coalition end of February is when this thing came out. So 1st of March, I started building this coalition that we call the Western Sports Industry Coalition. This coalition is unlike anything the horse world's ever seen. And actually, the thoroughbred people have called me and complimented me on putting this together. And what it is the reason it's so hard to put something like that together and get all of these organizations out there. People don't, a lot of people wouldn't realize how many organizations are rodeo type organizations and companies out there that, you know, actually have their own association and their own group of people that rodeo and, you know, cause there's the International Pro Rodeo, there's the Professional Rodeo Cowboys Association, there's the PBR, the Pro Bull Riders Association. There's all these different groups out there, and they don't generally work together on anything because they're competing organizations, and there's a lot of bad blood between a lot of them, because they've been, a lot of them have splintered off from the PRCA, the Pro Rodeo Cowboys Association, and made their own little deal because somebody got disgruntled with something that was going on with the PRCA or whatever. So the fact that I have all of those entities in one coalition, over 60 of them, so they're all in one entity in one coalition, has been very impactful and very promising for the Western industries, our Western world as a whole, because it's brought people together and to the table, and people are a lot less snarky and bitey at each other, for lack of a better way to say it. You know, it's there's a lot more kumbaya in our own industry and our own little piece of the world. And with that, we started educating all of these council members in the city of LA. And so we started educating. We came up with a game plan that everybody got along, everybody agreed on. All these organizations agreed on the talking points we were going to use. So we've had, since middle of March 2021, we've had a Zoom call once a week with this coalition, almost every week. I mean, there's, you know, some holidays and some days, some weeks we get canceled or whatever, but almost every week we have a Zoom call with this coalition for almost, well, for over 2.5 years now. And we've put this great team together. It's very cohesive. We work very well. Everybody's working well together. We've all had, there's been a lot of different ideas, but nothing that's ever put us in a spot where we weren't working together. So it's been a great situation, but we've educated everybody in LA. So now to the education part. We first, because all of this was done during COVID, we had to do Zoom calls, Zoom meetings for almost 2 years. That's all we got was Zoom meetings. So we finally got some in-person meetings this last summer, and that was it. But the Zoom meetings, we'd had two or three with each city council member's office. And the LA City Council has gone through a lot of changes in this last 2.5 years, with people getting ousted and, you know, people making racist comments and then having to resign. And I mean, it's just amazing what the city of LA has gone through. Not just all their troubles, but with their city council. So we've had to educate new members. We've done a lot of that. So we've done our due diligence. And when we went in there for our first in-person meetings, we were like, all I can liken it to is we were like a breath of fresh air to these very liberal city council members. We were like a breath of fresh air, because we were normal people being respectful and going and sitting down and talking to them and saying, hey, this is reality. And we're showing them everything, being respectful, all of that. And they ate it up. I mean, they loved it, because when you go watch, if you go on the city council meetings every whatever, I think it is on Tuesdays down there, the open meetings, you watch that. And there's people yelling F you to the everybody up there. There's people wearing sock puppets making noise all the whole time. I mean, it is a gong show at the LA City Council meetings. I mean, it's not even, there's nothing that resembles normalcy there at all, or decorum. I mean, very little decorum. So when we went in there and did what we did, they were just like eating it up. And so we felt like we had a really good shot at stopping this whole thing. Then all of a sudden, Blumenfield, the councilman that's pushing this, has decided that he's losing ground with everybody. So he's going to just go to, and back to, you know, one of the things in that equipment, you know, LA is going to have the Olympics in 2028 there. Well, if they ban fixed spurs, that's what all the jumpers ride, or a lot of the jumpers ride, and the dressage people, a lot of them don't wear a rowel on their spurs at all. It's just a post spur. Well, that is the epitome of a fixed spur. So they were going to ban the Olympic sports in the city of LA when they got the Olympics coming. So we pointed that out to them too. So the Olympic committee came on with us, and the Charros, we have a very diverse group because we've got the Bill Pickett All Black Rodeo Series on our side, the Compton Cowboys, the Buffalo Soldiers. Those are three black organizations. And then we have the Charros, which all the Charros organizations, which is where rodeo started. And actually rodeo started in LA before California was even a state, part of the United States, with the Mexicans and the Charros back then. So they hold a lot of weight. So we started pushing back pretty hard on that. And then all of a sudden he changes it to where he gets mad and he changes it to where it's just going to be, he's going to change it to where it's just, but instead of implements of torture. Now, remember, he said he was only banning torturous implements, not trying to ban rodeo. Well, then he comes out and he says, well, I'm just going to ban rodeo. I'm just going to amend this thing and ban rodeo as it's defined in the state statute, which means three or more of these events in one thing or in one event. So it's three or more of the different disciplines in one event. That's what, and it explains the different events in rodeo. So then he figured out that many of the council members we went and had in person said, if he tries to ban just outright ban rodeo, that's a non-starter for us. So he figured that part out. So now he's just going to ban bronc riding, bull riding, and calf rope. Well, now he's being very discriminatory. So we actually already have our ducks in a row to sue the city of Los Angeles if they do ban rodeo or ban our lifestyle in any way, shape, or form. And people go, well, just let California fall off the, don't worry about LA, let it go. Go somewhere where they want you to be there. That's not the point. We can't let the second largest city in the United States ban our lifestyle without a fight, because then it just bleeds out to other ones. So same thing with New York. We've been fighting the same kind of thing in New York for the last four or five years. We've been fighting this one council member up there in New York that's tried to ban it. And that's the same thing here in LA. One of them's gone that did it 4 years ago, and then they skipped a year, and then they came back. This Blumenfield came back with it. So now, fast forward to why you and me got in contact with each other, is San Diego. The Democrat Central Committee of San Diego is calling for banning rodeo because somebody wants to do something that's really cool in San Diego, which is put on a very large, high-paying rodeo in the Padre Stadium. And everybody's all excited about it except for this one ideologue member who's convinced the Democrats Central Committee to put their name on it. I'm surprised that he was able to, because if you look at his social media, and I've looked him up, we do our due diligence that way, and I've looked him up, and he is animal rights nut, and is... Have you looked him up at all, Gabby? Have you looked at that guy?
I have seen his resolution language, and just by reading that, I was able to deduce that he is quite misguided, and he gets his information from probably the animal defense exactly. Law fund and PETA type. So yes, no, it's easy to surmise that from his resolution. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you go look, I mean, he is a gong show. If you go look at his social media, it's like everything you would expect that he's going to go after. And he's an attorney. That guy's an attorney that's in Pease, his last name's Pease. And it's almost uncanny how much him and Blumenfield look alike. I mean, they look like they're brothers. So I don't know what that means, but it's kind of uncanny that they do. But yeah, that's where we're heading into trying to figure out how to stop them from doing that in San Diego. What a huge event that'll be in San Diego and bring so much economic impact to the city of, I mean, it's going to be a probably at least a 4 or 5 day event, I would think. I don't know. I haven't looked at the schedule of that event, but from the sounds of it, it's going to be like a West Coast American rodeo, like the big one they put on in Jerry Jones's house over there in Texas. So, and it's not a sanctioned event. So it's not sanctioned by the PRCA or any of the other groups. It's a standalone. It's just come make your money, and their payout is going to be huge. I mean, it's going to be massive, it sounds like, and it's really a neat deal. But
I've been to a few rodeos. I was kind of late to the game in visiting and attending it because I've just been so busy running my business and doing things. But I grew up near, and I lived for a time by the San Juan Capistrano rodeo, and I don't know if it's still active there, but it's a big part of the heritage in Southern California, even with its politics and inklings today. And I know that people care very deeply about the animals that they're riding because those are expensive horses, steers, bulls. Like, they don't want to endanger them because it's a means of making a profit, but also they're very attached to the animals too. I think that's what a lot of these activists fail to understand.
Yeah. And I think that the interesting part is people think these bulls are mistreated. These bulls love to get on the bus to come to town, and you can see it. And if you think you can't get, or you can get a bull to do anything it doesn't want to do, you're sorely mistaken, because that's 2,000 pounds of just bad medulla oblongata, you know, kind of a deal. I mean, they could really screw up a lot for you if they didn't want to do what they do. But the interesting part for a lot of people is they don't realize that, you know, the average bovine is not going to live past 3 years old. I mean, the average is not going to live past 3 years old. It's going to become a food source. And these bucking bulls don't even get started bucking until they're 3 or 4 and really doing something. And then when they get done, if they're, you know, they never go to be processed. These bulls, most of them, probably 90% of them, live out their life at stud, you know, and have a bunch of cows to breed. And I mean, after they're done riding, they only work 8 seconds at a time. So they're only doing what they're doing for 8 seconds, and that's probably once a week. So if you times, even if they were at, which they're never at a rodeo 52 weeks out of the year. So, but if you add it up, they got maybe, 2 hours worth of work in a year to do, and that's about it. So it's a pretty nice life. Same with the horses, you know, the bucking horses. And one of the things that is really a key talking point is these animal rights groups talk about how many deaths and injuries and that we lie about all that stuff, especially in California. It's pretty entertaining to hear them say that. I'd like to see him stand in front of the state vet and have him say that, because the interesting part about it is there has to be every PRCA rodeo has to have a veterinarian at it. If you're going to be a any kind of a sanctioned rodeo, there has to be a veterinarian, state licensed veterinarian there, and they have to check the animals before they go in. They check them after they come out for any injuries, whether it's a scratch, a nicked hoof or a bloody nose or whatever it is, or a broken back or broken leg. They have to report anything to the state veterinary. They have to make a report and report it. So all of those things get recorded. And when there's any other industry that would have a 0.065 problem or injury rate or if you think of any other kind of business, a 0.065. So just over half of a 1 percentage point is the, or actually 1/100th of a percentage point of all the outs, what we call outs or exposures, you know, which means animals coming out of the chute, whether it's roping, bucking horse or whatever, there's a 0.065 injury rate. I don't know any other business that has that good of a rate on anything they do. And that is, by law, has to be recorded by the state and the state vets. And so if they come and they start telling people, are telling you that, you know, we're lying about the statistics, go, well, okay, well, then why is the state board, you know, do you really think a veterinarian is going to risk his license for a rodeo or for somebody to just not report a broken leg or a problem with an animal? So you can hit them with all kinds of stuff like that, but they don't want to hear it and they won't listen to it for the most part, but you have facts on your side.
That is true of also hunting and fishing, because the reason why we're discussing this topic and bringing folks like you on the show is because there's a lot of parallels to the animal rights crusades against hunters, anglers, rodeo, cowboys, farming, ranching. It's all intertwined. And that's why I think it's extremely important to highlight this, because they're not just stopping with one area. They're expanding altogether to get rid of anything resembling normalcy and really, you know, push anti-science kind of thinking and musings out there into the public and be guided by emotion. And you can't have these decisions, whether it's rodeo or wildlife management or horses, you know, decided by emotion, because then it leads to untold problematic things. And so no, it's a big hurdle. And I appreciate having someone like you on to talk about what's happening on the rodeo side. And Dave, if people want to connect with you, support Western Justice, learn more about your efforts, help to protect rodeo, where would you like to send them to and how would you like them to get involved?
So our website is www.westernjustice.info. We are, our 501c4 is a membership-based, very similar structure to the NRA. We're membership-based. It's tiered. The only thing we don't do is we don't give out a lot of free bags, and because we haven't gotten to the point for to be able to do all that yet, you know, but we are the fastest growing organization out there of its kind. And we need to be, I mean, honestly, if you put the ranching, the Western horse world and the rodeo world together, we are one of the largest, most financially well-heeled demographics out there. So when I get everybody to come together, this is going to be a very large group and a very strong group. The other, you know, one of the other initiatives we're also doing is I'm being asked to be basically the Ralph Reed of get out the rural American vote, because people just don't trust a lot of the things going on right now within not only the voting or just, they don't trust people in general, the politicians that are asking them to vote. So they, with me being a trusted source in the Western world, they want me to step into that role. So we're going to be pushing our get out the rural American vote. We also built a platform that people need to start using. We have a platform of our own called Rural America in Action. And it is a crowdfunding, surveys and polls and petition site. So we have basically a change.org, a GoFundMe and a Survey Monkey all in one platform. One of my big donors put a lot of money into getting this thing up and going. And it's, you know, where people are people go and when they use some of these other sites, if you go look at where they donate their money to, and they donate to these environmental groups and these animal rights groups and people like that. That is scary to me because these businesses make a lot of money. Change.org has over 500 million users worldwide. And they are funding a lot of the people that are trying to ruin our food supply and our way of life. They're helping to donate to them. So come use our platform, Rural America in Action. It's a great platform. It's real easy to use, and that'll save from having those people get the money that they get, you know, and that's a big deal to me.
I'll include all the links to the show notes. Dave, it was wonderful catching up with you and learning more about. Thanks for listening to District of Conservation. If you enjoyed what you heard today, go leave us some reviews on Apple and Spotify or wherever podcasts are played. Your feedback will help us reach more people, and I love to know what is on your mind after each episode. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter to never miss a beat or a guest announcement, because that is our way of updating all of you listeners, and we have just hit 1,000 followers on Instagram for the podcast account. Thank you very much. And if you have any guest suggestions or topics you want to hear on the show, I'm all ears. I would love to hear your feedback there. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for the next episode.